It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And let's talk legal with us in the studio. Welcome, Cecil, Wes. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, Mike?
Well, I'm fine. You know, we were talking before the show here. You know, life goes on. Things don't stop because of, you know, the pandemic. And we have to keep our affairs in order and also look out for mom and dad. If you're a gentleman our age.
Right. So you mentioned to me, what is our topic for the day?
Yeah.
And my response was, well, you know, one of the things that continues to march right along, even though we're all dealing with the COVID-19 situation, is that, you know, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, loved one, you know, situations arise where folks have to get to that higher level of care. And, you know, a question that we get very often is, okay, what happens if mom or dad go into a care facility? What if they're in the hospital? Because of whatever, and because of dementia, because of Alzheimer's,
sure.
Because of a fall, because of whatever it may be, could even be COVID-19, and they're discharged, but they're discharged into a care facility so that they can rehab and get better. That's expensive, Mr. Collins. That's expensive, Mr. Harvell. What can we do? I've heard this from things that we can do to protect, you know, what we've accumulated our entire life. So what do we do? What do we do? So that's an issue, obviously, that marches right along for folks, even though, you know, COVID-19 has everyone's attention right now.
Mm-hmm.
So at Harvell & Collins, we deal with that issue quite often. We stay up to speed with regard to the law dealing with these issues. This kind of falls into a major category of what's called elder law,
mm-hmm.
that we've discussed briefly with you before on the program. So we're going to talk about that today.
Good.
We're going to talk about what those questions are and how we deal with those issues and walk our listeners, you know, through that process.
Very good. Mm-hmm. You said, though, that the elder law, you know, you're aware of all the changes that take place. Is that something that does change to the elder law? Are there new statutes, new writings for it?
Kind of a couple different – that's a great question, Mike. A couple different things I would say about that. The first thing is, yes, sometimes we have – the Medicaid laws, and
okay.
That's kind of what we're going to talk about. They change.
Sure.
And when they do change, there's typically a notice procedure where we know this is coming down the pike. This is something that, is going to change. This is moving through, you know, the General Assembly. This is moving through the law process, the statute change process. And that could be a federal change, but more commonly, it's a state change,
okay.
Because Medicaid is a federal program administered differently state to state. The other area that we really have to and do stay very in tune to is how the state, from county to county and even at the state level, handles cases.
Okay.
You know, we deal with a lot of Medicaid application cases. And we have a lot of contacts across the state, other attorneys who practice in this area. And we like to, you know, share information with each other. This is how this issue is dealt with. This is how that issue is dealt with. So sometimes there's some interpretation by the state of North Carolina dealing with these Medicaid laws, interpretation of the law that's already on the books that us attorneys, you know, we need to be up to speed on how that is dealt with. So yes, it is, you know, it's an ever moving,
evolving,
yeah. You know, situation that we're up on. Last thing that we want to do, obviously, is fall asleep at the wheel representing our clients and doing this work and think that, oh, what we've always done is just fine. You can't do that, because then what happens is that if you're not up to speed on how this works, then you have a situation where the planning that is done may be questioned.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're having to deal with an interpretation potentially that if you stay up to speed on it, you know how to deal with it. You know how to plan. You know how to put your client in the absolute best position possible. So
good.
Staying up to speed on that is vital.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Cecil?
Mike, elder law really is, just a sentence or two on that. It is a comprehensive, substantive area of the law. I mean, I kind of see it as clients come in and you kind of just have an extensive checklist. And it begins, of course, with, you know, what in the world do your current documents say? You know, let me see a copy of your will, your last will and testament. Does it leave things equally to the children, or is there some exception in your file? Let me see your power of attorney, your financial power of attorney, and is it up to date? Does it allow your agent to make transfers to these trusts, to create, to modify, Mike, to amend certain trust? We see powers of attorney every day that do not have that kind of specialized grant of authority in them. And your child is going to need that specialized grant of authority to assist you in protecting your assets if it were to come to that. So absolutely, we begin with just really fundamental review of important documents that your family needs to have. The next thing, of course, is that it's important to realize that really what we're doing after that is kind of what I call putting the square pegs in the square hole, the round pegs in the round hole. It's all about how is the net worth titled. How is the net worth structured? If you own your home, just outright, either with yourself, if you're an elder woman and you've lost your husband and you're a widow, well, you know, that might not be the best way to own your home when you're 85 years old, okay? If you're married still, and the home is tenants by entirety, which usually it is between elder folks, well, maybe we ought to talk about the home being placed in a trust. So again, what we're doing is putting a square peg in a square hole by restructuring the title to the assets. The goal here will always be, as Wes and I talk with clients, that, you know, your balance sheet or your net worth statement, your home, your stocks, your bonds, your money in the bank account, that, by the way, isn't going to change when we do our planning for you. That's going to remain generally the same. Okay, because that's what we've been hired to do, to protect the assets, not to have assets that were once worth $300,000, now only worth, you know, $100,000. That's not protecting the assets. Where did the other $200,000 go? The family assets are still going to be the same. It's just that we as the lawyer are assisting you in structuring them in such a way whereby we can assist you in the application for any kind of benefit if your loved one is forced into a skilled care facility.
You know, you said something earlier, Cecil, about a elderly woman living mm-hmm. alone.
And yeah, widow.
I know many elderly women living alone that listen to this show. Quickly, if you could, what would be the benefit of not owning it outright but putting it into a trust?
Well, if our elderly widow lady owns her home in her own individual name, then it could be subject to some sort of lien recovery if she were ever to have any kind of government benefit assist her in the payment of her nursing home care.
Okay.
And so by us taking the home and structuring it in a trust, the home is no longer in the probate estate. It's in a trust. It's in a secondary, posture, if you will. And it is not subject to, under most circumstances, not subject to lien recovery in the state of North Carolina. The state of North Carolina, and specifically Department of Medical Assistance, they look at the assets that are in the probate estate. What they ask us every day of the week at our office at Harville and Collins is, please provide us the inventories. Please provide us the accountings that you are filing with the clerk of court. Because those inventories and those accountings, Mike, indicate what the probate assets are. Now, if this widow's home is titled in the name of a trust, The trust is not going to be disclosed by law. This is the law. The trust is not disclosed on the accountings with the clerk of court because it is not an asset that is passing pursuant to the last will and testament. It's passing pursuant to the trust agreement. It's an outside asset. It's an asset that is no longer in the within the auspices of the probate estate, and therefore the state of North Carolina doesn't look at it. Now, there's no trick here. There's nothing under the table happening. I want to hasten to say that because it might sound like that, but it isn't. The Department of Medical Assistance, they are well aware of the fact that there are trust assets. Mm-hmm. The clerk of court knows that there are trust assets. It's just that those assets are not disclosed on the accounting, and that the law currently in the state of North Carolina is that the Department of Medical Assistance does not aggressively pursue assets that are outside the probate estate. The statute or some of the guidelines in and around the statute actually say that they can look at times at a trust created by the, quote, grantor during their lifetime. But the practical end of this analysis is that the state of North Carolina, and it would fall within the Attorney General's jurisdiction, just simply does not seek to recover non-probate assets.
Interesting. So if that happens, is that immediately put a lid on that property? There's no look back
Correct. You know, I'm sitting here listening to Cecil's very broad explanation of your question, and a couple things come to mind for me about that. We're talking about the widow. We're talking about the widow with the house in her own name. We're talking about the widow who ends up having to go into a care facility.
Sure.
She becomes eligible for Medicaid. And by the way, that's a huge issue because, you know, nursing home care, $7,000 a month.
Yeah.
Very expensive. Mm-hmm. So when she becomes eligible for Medicaid, it could very well be because she signs or her loved one, meaning like her child, signs a document called an intent to return home. That's all you have to do to make that home not countable. But guess what? That home, just because you sign an intent to return home, is still subject to that lien recovery when she passes away. So where the rubber hits the road with that is that upon the death of the widow, then the state of North Carolina hires a local attorney to petition for the sale of the property. They sell the property. They take the money from the sale equal to the amount of the Medicaid that's been paid, reimbursement, and whatever little bit is left. Breadcrumbs are given to the kids, if anything.
Yeah.
Now, if you put the property in, and Cecil's very broad in what he just explained, a trust, but not just any old trust. This is kind of where, you know, we have to be up to speed on how this works in the state of North Carolina. A properly drafted trust with particular language in it, established appropriately, then that is an asset under the law that escapes this lien recovery, escapes this estate recovery.
Yeah.
I know we're about to go to break in just a second. And then back to your question, immediate. Is it immediate? Well, and I think probably what you're thinking about there is what a lot of our clients or potential clients bring to the table when they sit down with us. Isn't there a look back period? Isn't there a 3-year or 5-year? I've heard something about that. And the answer to that question is no, there's not in this particular situation. On day one, we could do the planning. On day two, you're eligible. The property is protected. There's no look back period. And the reason why is because the look back period, that captures what's called a sanction. That's when you give assets to your kids, for example.
Sure.
Can't just put everything in the kids' names and say, oh, I don't have anything. I'm eligible. Mm-hmm. Well, we're structuring the property in widow's name in a trust for widow. So we're not transferring anything under the control of the kids. All right. So there's a couple steps I've left out there because it gets a little bit tedious. We get into the weeds a little bit.
Sure.
Exactly. And I have a tendency of doing that, and I'm trying to be broad like Cecil was right there. That's a lot easier to listen to than the weeds conversation. But nevertheless, the way we structure the property, immediately not countable, This could be the home. It could be a second home. It could be whatever. And then the properly drafted trust is an asset that is not subject to that lien or estate recovery. Good. So okay. That's the kind of the big picture with regard to that.
We still have the home. Yep. The asset is still within the, family.
Have a life estate.
Yeah.
In it.
The windows still have to be washed. The dishwasher still has to be unloaded. The grass still has to be mowed. Nothing really has changed. But, you know, Mike, our listeners are going to clue in here. I know they already have. Many people change the nature or title of their assets. Sometimes assets are in a limited liability company. Sometimes they're in a corporation. Sometimes they're in a trust. I oftentimes get the question, you know, Mr. Harvell, why are you and Wes not using a limited liability company? You know, why don't we put it, a smart son up in New Jersey, you know, helping his mom down here in North Carolina will ask me that question. And I appreciate the questions like that. We could use a limited liability company or a corporation. We could use that in our planning. Okay. Potentially. But of course, those types of entities require annual updates. They have annual costs. They require maintenance, if you will. Mm-hmm. This trust that we create, a revocable trust that holds the most of the title to the real property, really is kind of a done deal, if you will. We just keep on with all the things that I mentioned a minute ago, those funny things like cleaning the windows and loading the dishwasher.
That. That's good.
Yeah, but there's no maintenance. There's no annual Secretary of State fee. Mm-hmm. There are no minutes. There's no real maintenance of that trust agreement.
We'll take a break here. That's excellent. Thank you, gentlemen. I started to derail you there, but that was an interesting question, because I know we have listeners that fit that criteria and hope they're listening today on Harvell and Collins Let's Talk Legal. If you have questions after the show, you can call them at the office, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We're going to take a short break here and return. We can take your phone calls, 252-247-7282. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. And if you want to join the conversation, we're talking about asset protection and elder law. Very important topic here. And you can do that by calling 252-247-7282. So I was thank you for answering that question about putting the home into a trust. That sounds like something that I think I need to probably think about.
There's so many areas in the law where it's, you know, if you plan, it's taken care of. If you don't, then we're picking up the pieces later on.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that picking up the pieces is not, you're not, as an attorney, you don't always get 100% result for the client. But almost 100% of the time, if you plan ahead, you do get 100% result for the client. Also, when we're talking about expense, you know, the planning aspect of doing these type things, estate planning, asset protection, these type of planning techniques, the expense of doing that is so much lower on the front end than trying to pick up the pieces on the back end in the event, you know, we did not plan. So, you know, for listeners out there, you know, what should they be thinking about this? What should they be considering as they listen to Mr. Harvell, Mr. Collins here talk about how the law works with regard to saving the family home, with regard to saving the interest that we have in the family farm or whatever or other assets that have been accumulated over the years by mom and dad working real hard for years and saving, by the way.
Sure.
What they should think about is they should think about planning. Okay. Don't just sit back and think that everything is going to be okay. The scenario that I set forth just a moment ago, that's something that we hear all the time, where the intent to return home is signed, the person's eligible for the Medicaid covers the nursing home care over and above the income, which is normally a Social Security income, and then everything's fine until the widow in that situation passes away, and then there's a big lien recovery because the planning wasn't done. So, you know, it's important to sit down with someone who knows how these laws work, how to, as Cecil say, square pegs, square holes, round pegs, round holes, so that we don't have all of a sudden a surprise and an unintended consequence because we failed to plan. That's the big picture with regard to that. Now, really all we've talked about today, and we can go on for probably two or three more programs about the real estate, because we've got, you know, these issues that we've talked about today, and we kind of fell into a focus of the widow. Same thing happens with regard to husband and wife, spouses, you know, owning the home together. It's just as, it's equally as important to protect the property in that scenario as well. Same thing as it relates to a second home. Same thing as it relates to any kind of real estate. No look back period. The asset is protected. There's no lien recovery upon the death. So the structure that we're talking about works for real estate and is allowed under the law by using the statutes that are, available to us. Then we obviously get into other issues. Mike, obviously, normally folks have a little bit of money too, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, that goes into another conversation. Before I get into that, Cecil mm-hmm. may have a couple more comments about the real estate before
well,
we move on
well,
to the
just,
other.
Well, just, you know, how many of our listeners out there have friends in their church, community, neighborhood, or family where the early onset of dementia, you know. I see a lot of, you know, 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds. The wife is in or the husband is in. And their spouse is really has received a pretty devastating diagnosis. All of a sudden, you know, doesn't really know what day of the week it is. Is completely, unoriented as to many different factors in their life. And of course, this spouse, the healthy spouse is gravely concerned about, you know, of course I'm going to care for my wife for as long as I can, but what if it gets to a point where I am unable to care for her? And of course, the other side of that, the wife saying, you know, my husband, you know, he's, you know, 200-pound guy. I mean, you know, I can care for him and I want to care for him as long as I can, but sure. if for some reason he becomes infirm, I'm not going to be able to lift and move him and care for him on a daily basis. And we are being told by our medical team that we should be considering the fact that our loved one might have to have some sort of skilled care. So this is happening to folks that are not necessarily, you know, 90 years old, mm-hmm. 80 years old. We do see quite a few folks in that category, but we are also seeing more and more the younger folks, and that falls into Wes's comment about the, you know, the married couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not always the widow.
It's the younger seniors that are approaching. We're making a lot of them every day. 10,000 people retire each day, so mm-hmm. the people should plan ahead. It's we're going to take a short break here. We'll come back with our final segment for Harvell and Collins. You can reach them at the office, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back after this brief message. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. I'm going to throw it over to Wes Collins here to take us out on this last segment. This has been a great topic, gentlemen. I hope we can continue the conversation. Asset protection and elder law.
Right.
It's deep.
So just a minute or two left,
sure.
and give me a little warning. It seems like I keep talking through the end of
when you
our
see me do
completion
this, I'll say rap-
here.
Yeah.
I don't know. These hand signals come from the back, and I don't know what they all mean. But nevertheless, you know, another thing that's important is that oftentimes we get the family members saying to us, you know, I'm really concerned about mom living at home, really concerned about dad living at home. He can't remember anything anymore. You know, he got lost. He got in the car and what do I do? And the advice with regard to that in most cases is really involve and engage your doctor, the family doctor. Lean on the doctor some. Tell the doctor, these are the issues we're having. We want to get him placed because he's unsafe. And let the doctor make the decision so that that hard decision of mom or dad having to go into a care facility is not the kid's decision,
mm-hmm.
but it's a medical decision, you know, made by the doctor. So I see so much stress in that particular area And that's not really, you know, legal advice so much. I mean, that's just...
That's life.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
That's the way to deal with that. You know, this is really ultimately what's best for mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle or whatever the situation is. I know we 20 seconds left or so.
It's like a debate.
Under the circumstances from a medical perspective.
Sure.
So get the help of the doctor with regard to that.
Great advice. Thank you. Harvell and Collins. Check them out online. HarvellandCollins.com. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.